if you have the faculties and capabilities and intelligence,
the expectation is high.
The expectation should be there.
Examine.
That you should be able to examine your own life. And, and that is how you're going to be ready and prepared when the temptations come, when these evil forces can manipulate you or turn you into an agent of their
destruction. Or even when a politician is you know, on the campaign trail saying all their nonsense, are you going to be able to perceive this person's a liar or if, in fact, they're genuine?
Welcome to the QR Lab. My name is Kuldeep Tagore, and I'm here with...
Amr Zeki. How are you, my friend?
The Q.
R.
We're here to question our reality. That's R. But we're also on a quest to try to understand our reality. You and I were having a discussion today about this. We were talking about...
Yes.
What is the purpose of this podcast? Why are we doing this? Why are we questioning our reality? Well, it comes from a belief that we are so much more than just... this flesh and blood, that there is something else, that we feel it, it's innate, it's in there. We can't necessarily prove it, but the idea is the same, that there's something beyond this reality. Like, we are looking at something that we think is so real, but in fact has been described as an illusion by the ancients.
Well, even chemistry tells us the same thing, right?
Yeah, and so does quantum physics, that perhaps what we're observing is convenient to us in order to succeed and survive, and to our limited senses helps us in this existence, but that there's a belief there's something more, would you say? So that right there is the essence of the QR Lab. We are examining this, we're picking topics, and we're looking at things. And so in that vein, in that idea, we... take a look at the quote from Socrates that was later published in Apology by Plato, that the unexamined life is not worth living. And you've done some writing on this.
Circa, yeah. I mean, this is very, very famous. I think I first encountered this quote probably when I was in high school. I'm sure you did early on, too. It's very famous. Socrates was the original, and he said, a life not examined is not worth living. And, of course, this was propagated by Plato and Aristotle and others.
And he said this at his trial.
Oh, yes. Oh, what a...
Which
what
is interesting. It's an interesting comment to make.
Yeah, absolutely. At your trial. Absolutely. And I wonder, you know, I've never seen this. This is a slight aside. I've never seen a film about Socrates. What a film that would be, especially his trial. And if you and I ever get a chance to make a film, that should be one of our projects. Anyway, that's just an aside.
All right, we'll have to edit this out because I don't want anybody else to take the idea.
Okay, whatever.
I'm joking. All right.
But to answer your question.
Yes.
You know, a few days ago, you know, just looking at the state of the world, you know, the chaos in this country, what's happening on college campuses, what's happening in the Middle East.
It's disturbing.
Well, it's gotten to a level of corruption in our government and a level of disturbing activities that is now flagrantly out in the open. Just open hypocrisy about, you know, Western freedoms, etc. These kids can protest about anything, but if they protest on this topic, they get arrested, their heads get bashed in, and they're also putting professors in jail. You know, and these are the elite universities. This is MIT, you know, Harvard, you know, in New York, in Washington. I mean, these are the elite universities. But again, right? There's a context, right? So the other day,
trying to stay as objective as we can. You are specifically referring to the protests that are going on across the nation in college campuses regarding the ongoing war between...
Well, it's very specific, actually. It's about divestment because the students are paying tuition and they just simply want not only a ceasefire and the end of the genocide, but they want divestment from their universities to the occupation forces, right, in Israel. So... they're just protesting that. And of course, First Amendment rights, everybody has a right to protest. And these are nonviolent protests, by the way. Regardless, that's just an aside that's giving you a little bit of context, regardless of how you feel about the subject. So it kind of raises the question of, what is this where is this coming from, right? And it really has to do with something deeper. It has to do with self-examination. It has to do with the way you're raised. It has to do with what you actually believe to be true or right or morally upright. because we have a shared humanity, right? And when something happens to another group of people, we don't have a difficult time imagining if that was us, right? Unless you're dehumanizing them and they're no different than microbes to you, right? So we have a shared consciousness. We have a shared humanity. There is a shared moral order, right? And even people, by the way, corrupt politicians or governments, when they commit evil acts, they try to whitewash them in the media, right? They use the media to make themselves look good. Why? Because everybody wants to be good. Everybody wants to be morally upright. Even the people who commit evil want the appearance of morality because the public will not tolerate anything less than that. So it's in our nature to have a moral order, right?
So if we take an example, somebody like from the past, maybe Stalin, for example,
yeah,
would, even though he's out there committing essentially a genocide or murdering his own citizens, I think he's credited with killing millions of Russian people.
Oh, tens of, yeah.
He wants to have the appearance that he's doing it out of goodness.
All world leaders want to do that.
What is being done is being justified or good.
Look at our own government.
So you're bringing up a very important point that by de facto, we try to look good, at least, even if we know we're doing bad things. We try to paint it in a light that will be acceptable because of our shared morality, our shared understanding of what is good and what is bad.
Even if your master is the devil, you don't want people to know that. This is how important moral order and benevolence is in terms of human actions. It's certainly in our civilization and communities, right?
Nobody wants to follow, right, the devil. I mean, that's a very, very small percentage of people that would sign up for that and say, yeah, I'm going to be a Satanist. I want to be, even though there's some opinions on Satanism that it is, it is not exactly. But let's just take this idea that nobody wants to be viewed as the bad guy. Nobody takes pride in that. Like, even in the example of, let's just take something very secular like Star Wars.
Yeah.
I'm sure even the Empire is not going around parading itself as the evil Empire.
No, they think they're doing good. That's the thing.
They are portraying themselves as, no, we're bringing order. I think even in the film, in the films, the Emperor says that. No, we're going to bring an order.
No, they actually think they're doing good.
They think by taking control and oppressing people that they are doing exactly what needs to be done, that people want control. They want this oppression. I may not be articulating this
right,
but the idea is that even these forces of evil that we would objectively say, no, this is causing suffering, this is what we would generally categorize as evil behavior, is being portrayed as good, that it's okay.
Right.
This is a conundrum. This is a big problem.
Right.
Because when the oppressor, the somebody who is actually doing something bad, views themselves as the just, and they continue this, and they continue to gather support because by saying that, no, we're doing what is right. This is the way. It's a hard way, but this is the way it needs to be done. We're all objectively looking at it going, this is not the way.
Right. And hence you have democide, right?
So you have this idea right now. What we're talking about is, how do you know if you're on the good side or the bad side?
Yes.
Right? Let's just say Americans say, they think most Americans are saying, no, we're the good guys, right? Yeah. Now, we've had this discussion.
Yeah.
It's almost built into our mythology that we are the good guys. We are the cowboy, the knight in shining armor. We are the hero. We're the hero story. That's the American story. We're the heroes.
Yeah, American exceptionalism. Again, we would
exceptionalism, correct.
We would refer our audience to the Good versus Nice podcast because we've actually tackled this topic.
We've tackled good versus nice, but what we haven't really talked about is, how do you know that that you're on the good side or the bad side? So let's you got something to read here?
Well, this is what I want to briefly reference this. It's nothing earth-shattering, but it's really this reflection on the lack of examination. It's a much longer thing, but I'll just read part of it. People run around bouncing back and forth between their work and their responsibilities and their leisure time. And people seek comfort, entertainment, social life, and reasons to feel joy. This goes on until they die. And then what? Where is mankind headed? Does such a life prepare you for the times of calamity, the times when malevolence touches your life or society and evil rears its ugly head? The vast majority of people are not prepared to handle such darkness and depravity. When the devil comes knocking on your door, are you prepared to face him?
Well, it depends on how he's dressed.
Trick or treat.
Does he have his horns on? Does he have a tail?
Let me reformulate the thesis here. The idea is that we all have a certain amount of time, and we have our life, and we have our responsibilities. We also have time for leisure, right, and time where you just want to relax. But then the question arises: where is the time for examination, right? And how are you examining? Well, what is your methodology, and is it useful? Is it actually helping you develop into building a spine that can withstand the evil that will touch your society, your civilization, your life? And when the devil comes knocking on your door and you open it, now you're confronted with evil. What are you going to do? Which you may not even know, right?
Because you haven't taken the time to do this self-examination.
Let's say you know that now he's calling you to do evil, mm-hmm. or evil is at your doorstep. Here's the question. Are you going to fight? Are you going to sacrifice? What are you going to do? And this is the whole point of a life unexamined is not worth living. Because look what happened in Germany, right? Look at what's happening in the world. If you don't stand up and you say, this is wrong, I am willing to give up everything. I'm willing to stand up because this thing is a greater authority in my life than even my own life. Wow, what is that? That's what he means. A life not examined is not worth living. Because if your life is examined and you know where you stand and what you're going to do, that's a life worth living. Martin Luther King said, I would rather die on my feet than live on my knees.
One of the questions comes up regarding this issue is, how does one examine? How does one examine? So is it by, you know, doing a bunch of journaling? Is it by going to the prayers? Is it by
self-study, studying,
communicating right, yeah. with nature on a daily basis? How does one do this examination? I guess it's an individual question, right?
Yeah, this is, I think, you know, for our peers and audience members, people have their own methods, right? Maybe you talk to an elder in your family, a wise person, a grandparent or an uncle or a father or a mother, somebody who can give you advice, who you trust, who has wisdom. Maybe you have a friend who's very wise. Maybe there is a series of books or, you know, religious texts or practices that you've encountered. Maybe you have a spiritual practice, right? A thing that you do that prepares you. But see, all these things, they're almost the superficial. The question is this: what is the nature of life? And what is our purpose here? And what is the nature of reality? Because if you don't actually understand that, you don't know where you're going. And I guess for some people, it doesn't matter. They're just going to do it. They're going to do what they feel is right. For others, they want to know where they're headed, right? And so it really depends on your, on your level of awareness and what you're willing to know and what the time and effort you're willing to do to examine. And also, people tend to think that they're good. They tend to think that they would do the right thing. But the facts of history are the majority of people who think that about themselves are not going to do the right thing once the devil is knocking on their door. Right, there's a line that they're not going to cross that line, and they'll let somebody else, you know, sacrifice, and somebody else hand the problem, and somebody else go thrown in jail, and somebody else to go and get killed.
Well, even more nefarious and insidious is the devil doesn't come knocking at your door announcing himself.
Oh, it's very it's subtle. Yeah,
it's disguised. It's
the people of the lie, right?
Right. So that makes this. It would be great if evil would just announce itself and be like, that's not how evil presents. Evil presents almost
as your friend.
As your friend.
Yeah.
As something good.
Right.
And trying to coax you and trying to tempt temptation, for
example.
It's
the false god. It's pure deception, right? Especially when the evil that you do or that you're faced with actually appears good. Yeah. Dude, it's good to go doing those things. It's good to, whether you're a nation or a person, I was just defending myself.
Have you met people that you feel, not out of in a judgmental way, but in a way that when you're just talking to this person or you are engaging with them, you realize this person is very superficial.
They have an ulterior motive.
They could. But let's just say you had a significant discussion and there is no ulterior motive.
Right.
It seems like this is somebody who just kind of floats through life. Like, let's take, for example, the Forrest Gump example.
Yeah.
Somebody who just floats through life, but actually ends up having a very meaningful impact on the world by just being
through his innocence and his, you know,
through his innocence and good nature.
Yeah, he has a good nature. He has a certain innocence.
He had a good mother who taught him,
right?
Who guided him. And even though he's a simpleton, maybe incapable of ever doing self-examination, but has enough almost like common sense.
That's what I mean by right upbringing. I talk about correct upbringing. His mother gave him the morality. She gave him the principles.
The framework.
Yeah, the, you know.
That people need to stick with.
Yeah, the parables, right? And because he's so simple-minded, he's simply enacting the parables.
He just took it in, imbibed it, and became. And
life's like a box of chocolates, right? I mean, he just knows these stories. So he was raised in a certain way, and he acted on it. If he was not raised properly, he potentially could have been a very dangerous person because he doesn't have enough intelligence.
Right. I was just about to say, in this scenario, like in the movie, for example, he goes on and has great things.
He's a hero.
That happy, right? I think in the book, he even becomes an astronaut, goes to the moon. But in the movie, that doesn't happen. What if somebody who was nefarious, who recognizes him as a simpleton, comes in the wolf in sheep's clothing, comes in and
his mother could have been evil.
Turns him into
his mother could have been
a weapon of mass destruction.
Correct. And in fact, that happens all the time. Intelligence agencies actually do this quite well.
Yeah, they call it
their assets.
Assets.
Yeah.
Correct.
Exactly. Yeah. This is the whole point is, you know, Socrates, again, back to the nice quote that you mentioned in the beginning, back to Socrates, a life not examined is not worth living. Now, that's a very deep and powerful and shocking statement. I mean, listen to what he's saying. Is not worth living. What does he really mean by that?
Interesting, he did not say self-examination. He just said a life...
not examined.
So, does somebody else examine it?
would
that make it okay? Make it worth living?
No, I think it encompasses self and other examinations, probably. It's a more encompassing statement.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's pretty clear. And what he's saying there is that... it is self-examination, that you must be the examiner of your own life to make it worth living. No?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. You know, I think that's fair. And the other part of it is a little bit hard to unpack, which is it's not worth living. I mean, what is he really saying? Let's really look at this. So you give an example of somebody who did not examine their life, right?
Right.
Yet they had an amazing life. Socrates would say that's not worth living because it was unexamined. Right? An unexamined life, right?
Right.
Is not worth living. So I think that's open to interpretation because it's a very dense statement that probably has a lot of information in it. Is that true? I mean, you know, what if you have somebody who's a simpleton, who's innocent, who's maybe, you know, mentally not well developed, but is a wonderful, innocent, loving person? I think he would exclude them because they don't have the mental capacity to do examination. He's talking about the person of average intelligence who has the capacity to examine, who has the capacity to put themselves under the light, right? Nobody's perfect, right? We're all sinners. We're all trying to, you know, improve our lives and hopefully, right, in multiple dimensions.
Yeah, I think if you have the faculties and capabilities and intelligence.
The expectation is high.
The
right?
expectation should be there.
Examine.
That you should be able to examine your own life. And,
and
that is how you're going to be ready and prepared when the temptations come, when these evil forces can manipulate you or turn you into an agent of their
destruction. Or even when a politician is, you know, on the campaign trail saying all their nonsense, are you going to be able to perceive this person's a liar or if, in fact, they're genuine? You can only do that if you know, we did this podcast on the lie, right? How to detect lies, right?
Yes.
That episode. And part of it, what I was saying is you have to almost know yourself. You have to know enough about yourself that you can detect things in others. Right? Because there's one level where you have an instinctive response, like, oh, this person makes you feel uncomfortable or uncomfortable, right? There's something about them that's right or wrong. There's chemistry or no chemistry. But then there's another level, which is you're able to explicitly see deception, see lies, right? Because there's an incoherence between what is being said and their bodily movements, right? There is incoherence, right? There's a lie there, right? Meaning if I'm speaking from the heart, you're going to know. It's going to hit you with a certain frequency, with a certain energy. You're going to look at me and say,
that's authentic.
Yeah, this is authentic. You may or may not agree, but there's no lying in it. But then I could talk in a certain
way. Reminds me from a great line in Scarface. I like you, Tony.
Yeah.
There is no lying in it.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Even and then the concept comes up later when he says, I always tell the truth, even when I lie.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's what he's actually saying.
Yeah.
He's saying there is an authenticity in me, right? There's an authenticity in me. So whereas by contrast, somebody could be saying stuff. It may sound all beautiful, but something is wrong. Because when you properly assess that person, you're looking at them, whether it's physically or an image of them, and you see lack of harmony between their movements, their facial contortions, what they say, right? A smirk in their, you know, in their mouth or a look in their eye. There's deception that's being hidden. So this is called body language, right? Where people are able to look at how people talk and move and their gesticulations and their their gestures, and look at what is actually being said and look for coherence or incoherence, right?
How else could you tell if somebody's lying?
You have to know yourself.
If it was just a written phrase and there was none of these things you're talking, mm-hmm. the nonverbal cues, for example.
You can't tell necessarily, right?
Well, you I think there you would just look at the words.
Correct.
And what the concept is or what the statement is, and then try to discern.
Right. But we need a context. Even like it's in a book, right? And it's in a verse, a certain chapter. It's in a certain context. Then you can make sense of it. But if it's in isolation, you may not be able to put it in context.
And the other issue about lying, which we should have discussed, and I guess we can take it up from here, is that lying comes in many different forms. Somebody could just flat out tell you a lie, but they could also omit. I think we did say that.
Omission versus commission, right?
Omission can also be a lie. But then there's also a little mixture of both.
Right. Correct.
Confusing somebody, saying something that's true,
right,
but implementing it or applying it to something where it doesn't apply.
Correct.
You know what I'm trying to say? Like there's deception occurring.
Even gaslighting is a form of lying, right? We talked about gaslighting before.
Gaslighting absolutely is a form of lying, yeah.
It's a very evil, nefarious way.
Gaslighting is one of the most, and it really has been.
It's subtle and vile.
It's been beautifully displayed by I think probably the greatest con man who's ever lived.
Right.
Donald Trump. He is a master at gaslighting people.
He is
a master at saying, oh, you think that's reality? No, this is the reality. And then just repeating the lie over and over and over again so that people are confused. And they just start believing it. They just start believing that, oh, yeah. This is the way it's supposed to be.
But I mean, world leaders,
it's supposed to be.
Like world leaders.
Yeah, he's not unique.
I mean,
there's a lot of con men, but he is above and beyond the best example.
Hey, he's good at it.
Yeah. It really is. It's problematic for me, you know, because we're having a discussion here about it doing, first of all, your life has to be worth something.
Right.
I think we all feel, you know, at some level that my life is worth something. But if you're not actually doing this self-examination and then being able to look at the world and interpret what you're seeing and trying to understand it, then you will be misled.
Correct.
Right? It'll be so easy for you to accept a con man like Donald Trump. It'd be so easy for, and look, I'm not necessarily saying that there's not nefariousness and problems with Joe Biden. Okay? They both have, as politicians, you're always going to look at these people and
they're both rotten in my mind. I'll just come out and say it. They're rotten.
Yeah, I mean, I think that most of us, I mean, we're facing problems. This has been said over and over again, okay? Like, talk about reality. Our reality is that we are facing probably the most important election.
In a century.
No, I would say this is the most important election that America has ever had. Sounds crazy to say it because we thought the last one was like that, but now he's back.
Well,
right?
I think,
and this time he's coming in with 91 indictments. He's coming in with an ongoing lie that the election was stolen, when in fact he appears to be the one and is indicted on these counts. But there is an entire group of people, and I'm not talking about a couple hundred people following this cult. There are millions of people. Okay, and even if you're not fully bought in as a MAGA Republican, you are sort of in the middle. And I've talked to people who say exactly what you said, which is that, oh, they're both bad. It's almost like a false equivalence, though. Like there has to be layers here. I don't believe that we're choosing between Satan and Lucifer. Okay, like, I think there is a difference, and I think that there. needs to be this sort of examination, this sort of recognition of the truth. I don't know why it's so hard.
Do you know this quote in history? And I don't know the exact source of it, but it goes something as follows. And I think it comes from the Middle Eastern culture. But I'll have to get the exact source of it, which is the people will always get the leaders they deserve. What it means is your leaders are not there. They're not there by accident. No. They reflect who and what you are as a people.
Yeah.
So it's an indictment, on this society as a national, you know, entity.
We've had great leaders in the past,
but we also have an immense amount of corruption in the government, and just look at the college campuses right now. They say freedom of speech, right? First Amendment, freedom to protest, but because it doesn't agree with their narrative, they will slam your head to the ground and they will arrest you. This is a vile hypocrisy. We don't have Western democracy.
The problem is that the protests have been linked to hate speech, and hate speech is not protected under the First Amendment.
There's no hate speech.
Well, I'm just telling you. I mean, this is not a defense. Okay, you don't need to.
I understand.
You don't need to defend the protesters.
Right.
What I'm telling you is that it has been. I don't know how, but the people in power, the people that are setting up the police, the people that are in charge of the universities, are being tasked with the idea that speaking out in favor of the Palestinians is essentially a form of hate speech against Israel, because you are supporting, right? You're supporting a... This is what's being said. Again, this is not my own personal opinion, but I believe this is how it's coming about, is that you're supporting a position that wants and has declared the decimation of Israel. So therefore, any support support against Israel is viewed as hate speech.
That's a classic example of gaslighting.
And is not protected.
It's totally... It's the classical gaslight... There's no better example of gaslighting than what you just said.
So that's why we need to have...
Because that's not what's happening in the protests.
Well, we have to have the discussion. Yeah. We can't even talk about it, right?
Right.
Like, if we try to talk about it, what happens?
They're going to throw you in jail.
This podcast could be under... So that's why we have to maintain this sort of...
No, it's a bunch of lies and hypocrisy.
We have to maintain a scrutiny toward what we are actually talking about.
Yeah, but we also have to speak the truth. I mean, the fact is, we all know what's going on in those protests. They want divestment, and they're... doing what is their rightful duty.
So this idea of divestment is the idea is like, okay, so if this company, if this university is being supported by...
I don't know. They have investments or they have deals or contracts with that government. And the students don't want that because the ongoing horror of Gaza is not stopping. And so they're simply saying we don't want to pay tuition. We don't want to be at a university that has a relationship that we consider is against our values.
I think that's problematic, right? This is a really problematic discussion, because look at the situation for somebody who is pro-life, for example, right?
Yeah.
Completely against abortion,
right?
Right. But that person exists in a society where for a lot of people, they believe that a woman has a right to an abortion. Okay. Let's not get crazy with this discussion, but my point is this: our society, our taxes, our tax dollars, our medical care, our health care has to go toward women's health that may result in an abortion. Well, what if somebody's totally against that? I want divestment. I don't want to be a part of this, you know, a situation where my tax dollars are going towards abortions.
Well, I mean, listen.
Do you see the problem with...
I totally understand.
Okay, so you have to be very, like, so this
no,
idea that...
No, but this is straightforward.
The idea that they're protesting and saying that they want divestment is a very... Now, this doesn't mean that their heads should be slammed to the ground. They shouldn't be allowed to speak. I'm saying they should be. I'm saying we should have this discussion.
Yeah, the disruptive, for sure. I mean, your point is good, but I think it's straightforward in the sense that, you know, if you have avenues, right, you have legal avenues, right? There's always going to be disagreement in society, right? People are going to disagree politically, morally, religiously, you know, whatever your background or your belief system or what you've worked out, you think the reality is and the meaning of life, right? So there's going to be disagreements. That's how life is. It's human beings will have disagreements. Now, as long as there are mechanisms where you can sue, you can go to the courts, you can, right? There are mechanisms and levers that are available to you so that when the conflict arises, you don't have bloodshed. Because at the end, the final common pathway of resolving human conflict is violence, right? And so all of our systems are in place to try and avoid that, right? Now, when your system is corrupted or doesn't allow you, right, and there is an urgency, people are dying, genocide, whatever it is, nuclear bombs are going to, right? I mean, there's going to be right. World War III, or et cetera. There's a level of urgency that where your levers available either don't act fast enough or you're not allowed to have that voice because it goes against a certain, say, political agenda or whoever's in power at the time. So what do people have left? Well, they have public protests because when they disrupt normal mechanisms of operation, traffic, you know, governmental buildings, universities, the entire society now has to respond and say, listen, this is such a problem. We're having instability in our society that's causing problems. People are not going to school. They're not paying taxes or whatever the problem is.
Yeah.
So it forces the powers that be that can make changes to respond in some manner. Now, they can respond in one of two ways only,
right.
Or three ways. And I'm gonna outline them. They can completely ignore it and let it go on and on until it fizzles out, mm-hmm. right? They can actually make the change that is being requested, or they can come down like a sledgehammer and violate their own rule of law.
And the latter is what we've chosen.
Yes, exactly.
So Jordan Klepper actually on The Daily Show had a discussion about this when he was discussing what's going on in these universities. And, you know, in a joking way, he said, okay, so it's time to de-escalate. But then he goes on and shows images of what they're actually doing.
Yeah.
More police force, more security, more...
Arresting professors.
What you're doing is you're adding fuel to the fire by doing this by force. I think that one thing that will keep this country sane is when the people in power, the power mechanisms, are used judiciously.
Correct.
Don't use
restraint.
Restraint. And
right.
I think that we've shown incredible restraint with how we've dealt with, again, these MAGA Republicans and Donald Trump. There's been an incredible amount of restraint. They are, if you listen to their Fox propaganda news network, they are saying things like, oh, this is unfair. You're only saying that because Trump is saying it. This is an unfair trial. Why is it unfair? Oh, it's unfair because it's in New York. Okay, he committed the crime in New York. The people of New York were defrauded. Why shouldn't they be the ones who are on his jury? Oh, we should move the trial somewhere else. Oh, they won't move it. Oh, this judge is biased. Thank you.
Partial.
I'm sorry. So again, this is almost maddening. It's frustratingly maddening that you will get these sort of nonsensical opinions.
There's no balance.
These are not true faith actors. They are not acting in good faith.
They are
deliberately deceiving and lying.
But where I disagree with you is you know, and Trump is a very, you know, is a very... he's sort of an apogee type example, but I think the whole system, I don't think there's any difference between, I know we're going to disagree on this, fundamentally, on the major issues that I care about, there's no difference between, to me, they're one club. They're a bunch of criminals. And by the way, the most corrupt people, they don't have tattoos and scars. They wear ties and nice trimmed glasses. They're the most
dangerous.
Corrupt people.
They're the ones who are able to enact the most dangerous.
This government... This Congress, this nation is in danger of collapse. And within our lifetime, if not our children's, it could happen on many, many, many levels.
Okay, but can I just say that I don't think what you're saying is earth-shattering.
It's not revelation, no.
Any government is always teetering on this.
No, but America has never been this close. Like when you said it earlier, you said this 2024 election
is critical. Well, because you know why? Because, and here's my reasoning. You have somebody who has already avowed to not follow the rules. And now they are running for a second term. And if they don't win, if Trump does not win,
you're going to have problems.
What's going to happen is that he actually is going to be held accountable. He's not going to be able to get out of things. But if he wins,
he's going to take revenge.
He will subvert justice. He will subvert justice. He won't show up for his trials. He'll eliminate his trials. He will get rid of all of them and just say, They don't matter. And then he's already said that he can go after his political. His lawyers are arguing in front of the Supreme Court saying that absolutely he could assassinate a political rival if it was deemed to be part of his.
I didn't know this.
This just happened last week.
Assassinate. This is being discussed in the Supreme Court.
And it is being discussed in a way that it is being accepted. The conservative justice, the Supreme Court, is in the back pocket of this radical movement.
Did they actually say assassinate?
They did. They said that
Corruption?
Yes, it has become corrupt. Elena Kagan asked the lawyer, John, this guy Sawyer, his last name is Sauer, I believe, and said, so, you know, he could assassinate his political rival, and if it was deemed to be an official act, so who's going to deem it? The president will say it's an official act. And the only way to get a president out of office is to have him impeached. Well, what if... You know, what if it's a Congress like this Congress that is comprised of so at the end of the day,
the collapse has begun.
But there's only one way to save it. It's for this population to examine their what do they truly believe? Do you truly believe in this person who is saying that? I think there's a lot of people who have not examined their lives.
And back so to just, examination.
Yeah,
right?
that's why I'm going with this. I think the whole point here is that we are facing crises because people are not doing this examination. They're not taking the time.
It's a little bit of, by the way.
And so they're accepting their leaders. They're accepting what they're given because, you know, that's just it.
You're absolutely right. I mean, you know what? This reminds me of another one we should do, another theme, which is laziness. I've done a whole analysis. And what you're actually talking about is in part due to also laziness. It's not just... people just want to kick back and watch the game. But the reality is...
There's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that.
But not to the exclusion of examining yourself.
What did I say earlier? We all have responsibilities. In that opening sentence, we go to work. We have responsibilities. You also have civil duties. You have community. There's a lot of responsibilities people have, right? The problem is, this is going to get into a bigger topic, our monetary structure is to us. The middle class is decimated now. They can barely even pay bills. Everybody's in debt. The whole system is there to enslave and wipe out the middle class, and it's being done on purpose.
It doesn't make sense.
No, it makes sense so that you don't understand what's happening, and the government can do whatever the hell it wants. So because if there is no time for you to sit down and think and sort things out, they'll do whatever the heck they want. And that is so dangerous because when people no longer have food on the table and cannot pay their bills, and
they will revolt.
And the IRS comes after them. This country is full of guns and weapons. And let me tell you, this is a revolutionary culture. At some point, Americans are going to stand up.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, there's only a million cops in the country. You think this government can hold down this population?
Well, you're assuming that they're going to be united. And unfortunately, what will happen is chaos because everybody
has their own... Of course there'll be chaos.
Everybody has their own beliefs.
No, this country...
There's a movie that came out called Civil War.
I'm going to see it, but this country will fall apart and split into different regions, just like the movie Civil War shows. I've seen the preview. Because people, as we said earlier, are different, right? They're diverse in their belief systems. They're diverse in their political inclinations.
If we do not have a system of checks and balances, if the presidency is occupied by a autocrat who has dictatorial tendencies. I should edit that out. Okay, if we have somebody who has dictatorial tendencies.
you're stuttering now. A little alleviation for our poor listeners there.
It's dangerous. So we have the presidency occupied by somebody who wants to be a dictator. We have a Supreme Court that will bow down and basically, because of the majority, will do whatever he says. And then we have a legislative branch who's incapable of even producing one bit of legislation. What are we talking about here? The end. This is over. The American experiment is over.
Correct.
The minute Donald Trump wins... The election, at the end of this year,
that'll be confirmation of the collapse. But the collapse has already begun. It's already begun.
So why do you think it is that a lot of Americans just don't seem to really? For me, it really sparks anxiety
because
and concern.
I'll tell you.
I'm extremely bereft.
I'll tell you what.
I'm extremely bereft of this because to me, it seems that this is the only thing that matters right now. This is the only thing we should be paying attention to. I had a conversation with a friend yesterday who has no idea what's going on, has no clue, but he's he's church going. He's a really good guy. He does all his community, family, work. He's got it all together. But on the subject of examination, maybe he doesn't care about politics. Politics don't matter to him. But shouldn't they? If you were truly examining yourself and your life and wanted to sustain and go on, there should be a level of examination that also brings you to examining what your options are, what you're being presented with, because that is going to ultimately determine your outcome in life. This is that kind of an election, and that we faced that in 2020. Obviously, Biden won, not the greatest president that we've ever had, but stabilization. And, it was nice to not always be dealing with the drama that was brought in the preceding 4 years. Now we have a situation where we're about to go back into that, and it's going to be so much worse. This is not the same person. And there's been a lot of dismissing the behaviors of these people and saying, oh, well, he might say that, but he's not really going to do it. I don't think that you should take people, give them that kind of leniency. If they are saying they're going to be a dictator on day one, you should believe that. Like Toni Morrison said, if somebody shows you who they are on the first time, believe them. If they show you who they truly are through their actions or words or behaviors, believe them. That is who they're going to be. Why don't we? I don't understand, right? And so coming back to the issue of examination, it's sorely lacking in this country, I feel, that if you really examined your own self, you would be able to look at this choice that we're faced in the next 6 months, and it would be a no-brainer. Yes, it's not a great choice, okay? We're filled with that in life. We're filled with choices that are not great, but we still have to make them. Staying at home and not voting is also a choice. Don't try to act like, oh, their choices are bad, I'm going to stay at home. That's not doing your civil duty. That's not doing what you're supposed to do.
It's a difficult thing.
So I sound a little bit like I'm preaching. Mm. I sound like I'm, trying to, give my advice on things. However, I think it's that important that we need to speak out against this, and we need to have people showing up. We need them engaged, listening. This is going to be a big deal.
Yeah. So you raised an important point, and you're ringing the alarm bells, which is absolutely true, and people should feel a sense of urgency. But your friend, who's a church-going, solid guy,
solid.
Here's the problem. There's really at least three things that I see. Number one, he's drunk the Kool-Aid. He believes in American exceptionalism, and the stability which has always been there will always remain. And the fact is, it's highly contingent upon the population to maintain that stability, not upon the government, number one. Number two, people don't really have time, or they say they don't have time. Everyone has time to actually get into this. But in general, a lot of people are so busy with their work and family that it leaves very little energy to engage, because it takes an immense amount of energy to sort through all this stuff, right? Number three, frank laziness, right?
You may call it laziness, but maybe it's more apathy.
Or apathy. That's part
right?
of it. Absolutely.
People are not motivated.
Right.
What if they were? There was a time when people would be motivated.
Take the food away.
They'll become motivated.
Make gas $15 an hour, and then people will wake up.
$15 a gallon?
And I'll tell you, yes. And let me tell you, this will happen. When it gets that bad, then those people are going to wake up, and they're going to start demanding things. And then you're going to have a level of instability. And you've seen this government. You've seen what it's done to the college students for something very minor. They're arresting professors. They're slamming, they're body slamming these kids. And these are the elite kids. These are the kids who are going to be future presidents. The future president of the United States is probably in jail right now, as Shahid Bolson said, right? These are the guys in the elite universities. So much worse is going to happen when they, bring the National Guard and things like that, and they start locking down neighborhoods, and they start coming door to door to confiscate weapons because there's some executive order because they don't want chaos. People are going to get their faces full of lead from homeowners. That's what's going to happen. And I'm telling you right now, Americans, wake up. This is coming. Your nation is in collapse.
Wake up and start examining your life.
A life
start
not
there. Start there, right?
A life not examined is truly not worth living. We've confirmed that quote.
Well, this has been a firestorm, I think. We've brought up a lot of controversial subjects and topics. We've definitely thrown down some opinions, which is okay because, again, it's a laboratory.
Laboratory, yeah.
We feel free to be able to discuss, be able to move ideas around. And quite frankly, we've reached like our 40th episode. So I've nailed it.
You've made a decision on which episode is number 40.
Well, this is kind of 40, no matter what. We can always do 50 or 60. My name is Kuldeep Tagore.
I'm Rzeki.
Please like, subscribe, invest.
Comment.
In yourself.
The Q R. Elaboratorious. We want to emphasize that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely our own, and they do not reflect the official policies or positions of our employers and places of employment or any of their affiliates. Additionally, our discussions on this podcast should not be considered professional advice or endorsements of any particular organization's products or individuals. We're here to share our thoughts and stimulate conversation, but we encourage you to do your own research and form your own opinions.